Welcome home. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. We're going to get Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road, presented by the Maryland Lottery and GBMC. You know, I promised myself that I would do more comedy in 2026, especially now that I'm creating my clone that can be comedic on my behalf. So I feel like we should mix sports and comedy together, and probably nobody's done that better than this guy. He was the longtime main event at ESPN. He's now doing a thing called We Need a Fourth. He is my Pearl Jam friend, West Coast Seattle friend, and I was reminded of you, Kenny Mayne, because my wife and her sisters decided to go to Quebec City the week before Christmas, and they went right on up to that giant hotel up on the hill where I ran into you and your wife, and we enjoyed Pearl Jam playing in beautiful, not Lake Colisée, the new Lake Colisée, but almost Lake Colisée for Pearl Jam. It's always good to visit with you, man. Happy New Year to you, and I'm glad we got our mics working.
Happy January 6th to Officer Goodman.
Seattle, Pearl Jam, I flew in, I snuck in to that beautiful theater in downtown Seattle where Cameron Crowe and Eddie Vedder held court for about 2.5 hours telling old stories, and it was glorious. Then I saw Robert Plant up the street at the other theater that was like 150 years old that goes straight up to the ceiling.
Paramount.
The Paramount.
And the first one must have been Benaroya Hall.
Benaroya Hall, absolutely.
I have a great Hall. Pearl Jam Benaroya Hall story. So you mentioned main event. That was the old football, pretend football stories. We did a couple with Baltimore, I think. Suggs, it was a good one. So we were in Seattle to do another one of our fake football stories, right? Our pretend football stories. And we had this Korean guy who worked at ESPN. He's an audio guy named Max Kim. He's about 5'7", doesn't look like an NFL player. However, we pretended that he was signed for $1 billion because the Seahawks wanted to win now. And we ran this joke for like 10 years. Every year there was a new iteration, right? So the second year, the team turns on him. He can't play all 22 positions as advertised. And he's a fraud and they want to get rid of him. Pull into town, me and Tom McCollum, my producer, we're driving up University Street because that goes right by Benaroya Hall, you mentioned.
Is that the one that's the big hill?
Yes. Well, we're going uphill.
I walked up that. My shin still hurt.
That's not easy. A lot of hills in Seattle. So we're going up this hill, and we look, and it says Pearl Jam sold out. And we didn't even know Pearl Jam was playing. We're doing a football story every week. I wasn't paying attention to Pearl Jam at the time, where they were playing. We're now in Seattle with our fake Seattle Seahawk, and Pearl Jam is playing. And in edition number one, where he was the guy that could play all 22 positions, Jeff Ament, my friend, the bass player, was in that story. So it made perfect sense that we now need to get to this Pearl Jam show somehow, some way. But we instead were planning to go to the old Sonics. God bless, rest in peace, Sonics. Brent Berry, we're interviewing about Max Kim, who we went with the name of Kim Il-Zong. That was his name. He wore number 129. He smoked cigarettes while playing. You can look it all up. It's on the internet. And Brent Berry says, hey, after he does his line, he said, hey, what are you doing tonight? And I said, what do you mean? We're at your game. It was an exhibition game. He said, do you want to go to Pearl Jam instead? I said, are you kidding? He said, yeah, I got two tickets. They're in my van. Go in the locker room, dig in my jeans, grab my keys, go to the players' parking lot, grab the tickets, put the keys back, go to Pearl Jam. So sadly, we left Max out of the Pearl. We only had two. And he's a British metal guy anyway. So we go to Pearl Jam at Benaroya Hall. It's one of their classic shows ever. It was mostly acoustic. They did Man of the Hour for the first time. I mean, that was a show. And just to have that whole memory and what a good guy Brent Berry is, period, and blessing us with these tickets and the ridiculousness of going into the Sonics locker room, going out to the players' parking lot, where we used to stand outside the players' parking lot just to watch Spencer Haywood and Fred Brown drive out, right? I mean, as a kid.
Jack Sigma.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's later. I go so far back, and I was just at Lenny Wilkins' funeral, by the way. I went out to Seattle a few weeks ago for that. Legendary, 3-time Hall of Famer, and became a good friend in my later years. I have a close tie. I was going to Sonic games. My dad used to work at the airport, so he would meet the NBA officials, and we would drive them. We'd pick them up at their hotel in my dad's car, drive them to the Coliseum, drop them off, and take them home after, and they give us two tickets. So they were basically just saving taxi money. This is a long time ago. This is late 60s, right? And so we would sometimes drive, Manny Sokol, Mendy Rudolph, whoever these guys were, going to a Sonic game. So I was a Sonic guy through and through. And I'm still upset the team was taken away. The Starbucks guys sold it to people who don't live in Seattle. They took their team to Oklahoma, and here we are. What's that? It's getting on to close to 20 years now, 18 years, I think.
You had a hockey team out of the deal, right?
Yeah, Kraken, they're fun. That's a great building, by the way. And that was the complaint, is that the gym wasn't fancy enough for an NBA owner to make the kind of money with the luxury suites and all that. So they totally upgraded, same footprint, same place, and they have some things that remind you of the old Coliseum right beneath the Space Needle. The Space Needle, I hope you went to Mopop. Did you go to Mopop while in Seattle?
I was not in Seattle long at all.
Okay,
my
next
friend,
time.
One of my childhood friends runs the Pioneer Square Underground Tours.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so if you ever want to do that, I got a hook up for you to
I think I could give the tour at this point. All right. I've been there. Yeah, that's the whole thing.
The water line and earthquakes,
oh, yeah.
And like, oh, I learned about
the
all
Seattle
of that stuff.
The Seattle fire, and they rebuilt above it, so there's still this existing underground that you can literally look up and there's people on the street above you. But Mopop used to be the Experience Music Project. It was going to be dedicated mostly for Jimi Hendrix. Paul Allen, our late Seahawks owner, you know, was a huge guitar guy and loved music. And they ended up making a bigger museum that just celebrates all of Seattle, Northwest music, and other musicians as well, not just them. They always have some kind of cool, you know, it could be video games, could be anime, it could be a feature film, whatever. And it's an amazing and really fun experience, Mopop. I'm a member. Just tell them you're my cousin or my son or something. Yeah.
So my Seattle thing happened because my buddy was there and because Robert Plant was there. But more than that, because Cameron Crowe was doing this thing with Eddie Vedder at the Ben Arroyo Hall. And I found a really cheap flight. But the problem was it landed at like 6:20 and the show was at 7:30 and I had to fly across the country. I landed and I thought I might make it. I might not. I didn't buy a ticket. I got a ticket in the third row center. Like, it was unbelievable. Then McCready sits right like to my left, and we got questions at the end, and my wife gave me the hardest time ever because I flew to Nashville for Sheryl Crow and Cameron Crow, and not the Black Crows, one has an E, but I didn't ask a question, and my wife's come on, dude, you're a journalist, so I flew to Seattle and I asked Eddie Vedder a question, and I asked him about trust and journalism. It wasn't for him, it was for Crow, about trust, and I said State of Love and Trust, whatever, and Eddie looked at me and said, I don't trust you. This way, Eddie Vedder said one thing to me in his life, and he told me he didn't trust me because I was a journalist. And then McCready gets up, and he has the best question ever for Cameron Crowe. He said, so when you got together with all these bands, Allman Brothers, did you like interviewing the guitar player or the singer more? And I thought that was a very fair question. You know what I mean?
Oh, so what was his answer?
I think he gave some coaching answer if he loves them all equally. You know what I mean?
We just watched Almost Famous the other night, by the way, and Jerry Maguire.
You know, we all have a Cameron Crowe thing. You know, I mean, so Fast Times for this guy here as well as Kenny Mayne is my guy. What are you doing?
A Sheryl Crowe note, quick.
Yeah.
She did a great song. I just heard it in my car as I was coming home to get this interview done. Joy Alotakin, you familiar? She's down in Nashville. Amazing. We saw her in New York City at the Blue Note about 3-4 weeks ago, and just got to look her up. I'll text you, but Joy Alotakin, I think I was calling it Oladokun, but I believe it's Alotakin. She did a duet with Sheryl Crowe. Look it up.
I feel like a jerk for coming to Seattle not calling Kenny Mayne. I just got in and out.
I probably wasn't there.
It was down and dirty. What are you doing? You're busy, right?
I'm mostly in Connecticut. You know that I got remarried. You met Gretchen up there at the Pearl Jam on my birthday, September of whatever that was, 3-4 years ago. I have a podcast with Kevin from The Office. That's Brian Baumgartner, right? You know him.
Yes.
And Cooper Manning, who I like to describe as the more intelligent and handsome of the three Manning boys. And it's called We Need a Fourth. I made up the title. Thank you. Got nothing extra for it. And it's essentially a comedy golf podcast. We interview somebody every week. A new one just came out every Monday. And we tape once or twice a week and we store a few. You know how that goes. But we've had a blast. Smartless came to me about this idea a long time ago, about a different idea, and it didn't work out. Smartless being Jason Bateman and Will Arnett and Sean Hayes, right? They have their popular podcast. And they started adding more shows kind of like under their umbrella, right? They're becoming their own little network. And they came to me about a different idea that I couldn't do. And we just kept talking, like, what could we do? Like, let's figure something out. How it all got put together is beyond me, but you know, I'll take Kevin from The Office and Cooper Manning any day of the week. They're both very funny. We got to kick off our show last summer in Scotland. We got flown over by the guys at Travis Matthew. It was a big golf, you know, outing. They brought in their people, and they had Reggie Bush, and they had Austin Reeves of the Lakers, and you know, it was Matt Leinart was there, Fat Perez, the guys from the country club adjacent.
I think you should hold your golf tournament in Scranton, my dad's hometown. That's what I think.
Not a terrible idea at all.
Maybe like Hazleton, Wilkes-Barre, something like that. Maybe Music, somewhere like that. Well, Clark Summit. I know all those areas.
I would love it if we did more in-person stuff because we get on. You know, I knew Cooper a little bit from before, but I'd never met Brian. And, you know, day one, first beer, we got each other right away. And it was very easy. You know, we tripped over each other early on, you know, when you're doing a thing with other people and you're in remote locations, it's easy to talk over each other and all that. But, you know, we found our pace. And like I said, the guests have been amazing, and hopefully the thing succeeds for a while.
Well, the Cooper Manning thing is interesting from your perspective because you're such an offbeat dude in real life as well as on your television life and your comedy and sort of the dry comedy that you are known for. The Manning family has fallen into taking what you've created in regard to sports and comedy and bringing it together. No one has done endorsement comedy better than Peyton Manning, maybe ever. He does it better than Kevin Hart. No offense to Kevin Hart. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, he's stealing all our work for other people like us. Can you just leave one?
Well, dude, Peyton? Eli's doing the stuff with Danny DeVito now. Doing the comedy.
Yeah, can I tell you, I did a story back in our pretend football stories again with Eli Manning and the Giants. Usain Bolt had just won the 100 in China. This is 2008, right? And we pretended that Usain Bolt was going to now go to the Giants. And we hired some local New York actors to play the coaches. And he was so fast, his 40 time was zero, right? They couldn't even get their thumb to the watch once, right? And they kept running it again and again, and we sped it up, right? And I remember interviewing Eli Manning in the pretend interview while we're looking at Usain Bolt, and I want him to comment about this new receiver he's going to have. And he said his line I gave him was, "He runs faster than my brother Peyton does to endorsement deals." That was in 2008, and it's only accelerated. So Peyton, he's stealing work from the rest of us. We'd like a share. Just a cameo. Background. I don't even need a line.
Dude, you've written some crazy stuff, and like some of your stuff's a little SNL, maybe inspired. Would you have ever at any point had Peyton Manning throwing darts into kids' chests as part of like shtick? Because you that's the lane you were in, was writing that kind of shtick. Saturday Night Live shtick that would come to life.
I will say this, Stuart Scott and I, and the documentary that just ran on ESPN was really good if you hadn't seen it. Stuart and I didn't come up with the idea, but we freestyled it, so we did do the idea before Peyton did the SNL thing you're referring to, where he's, you know, it's supposed to be United Way and he's drilling kids in the face with the ball. Stuart and I did the same bit, but in basketball, and the premise, it was the Big Buddy program, it was called. They made t-shirts, and Dan Patrick sets it up like, you know, we'd like to give back to the community, and you know, and then they show me and Stuart with his little 7 and 12 year olds, whatever, we're just screaming at them. Stuart's checking a kid, I'm yelling at the kid to get up, your parents signed the permission slip. So we did that exact bit, but not with football, right? So I'm not saying they stole it. I'm just saying it was a thing that had already been done.
I don't think I've ever talked to you about this. Maybe we've talked about it on a personal level, but you being sort of a straight newscaster and a sportscaster and coming to ESPN and having somebody in that building that says comedy can be a part of Sunday football, can be part of the show, you're broadcasting part of this, that you found the lane in that. But even the TV commercials with all the mascots and all of that, there was somebody in Bristol who had a sense of humor at one point.
Absolutely.
That brought that forward, that made you a big part of that for the worldwide leader.
Yeah, I mean, you know, referring to the This Is Sports Center campaign, Wyden and Kennedy was the one that came in with that. And I don't know how the committee meetings went, if some people were like, how dare we? We're journalists. We can't be joking around. But it totally took off. It's what most people, when they, oh, I love those old ESPN ads, right? That's what a lot of people say.
ESPN was fun with Berman with nicknames from the genesis of it. It was allowed to be fun, right?
Yeah.
I mean, reading highlights was part of it. Was if you didn't make it fun, nobody would watch, right?
Yeah. What's funny about it is I grew up, you know, I played football at UNLV. I studied journalism and political science and broadcast. Like, I intended to be Mr. Serious Newsman. That was my original goal. And it took a while to get on TV. Finally, I get on TV in Seattle after a few years of being, you know, behind the scenes, producing and whatnot, writing. And then they said, you're doing sports now. Because our little station was 5 days a week. It was the 10 o'clock news, an hour ahead of the rest. And then our internal slogan was, and if there's news on the weekends, it's news to us. Because we didn't have a Saturday.
And this is true Anchorman era, and you were the lowest budget. You're getting your ass kicked in the ratings by somebody else, right?
Easily. We're the
worst I know this.
We're the ones that show up late to the press conference. We're those guys. But, you know, we had some good people. It wasn't like a total joke. And they decided to add a weekend show, Saturday, Sunday show. And I played football, so I became the sports guy. Like, all right, you're doing sports. I was like, I didn't want to, really. But once I got into it and saw how fun it was and how much liberty we had, it wasn't like I was putting on an act. I just became the same guy you're talking to right now, but I did it on TV. I wasn't quite as polished maybe back then. And do you remember the Joe Montana to John Taylor Super Bowl? They beat the Bengals.
89, sure, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I had a good, what I thought was a pretty good little 4 or 5 minute local sportscast that night on that game mostly. I sent it blindly to ESPN. I was like, what do I got to lose? All I can do is, you know, say no.
Laugh at me, right, yeah.
They wrote back, or called back, actually, like 2 days later. The day they got it, they called back and said, send us another tape. We want to see if that was a fluke. So I sent them another tape, and then I flooded them with tapes. Like, well, here's another story. I get an interview. I was pretty good on the tryout, but I was not sufficiently sports nerdy enough for ESPN. It was clear that was my deficiency, right? That I couldn't, you know, tell them, you know, like, name
who the backup guard of whatever would be, right? Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I won't bore you with the whole story, but for a number of years, I freelanced in Seattle trying to get to ESPN for like 4 years. And when ESPN2 came around, I sent a letter to John Walsh. He was one of the top, you know, executives. And I said, please check the appropriate box. I'm trying to sort out my future. And the first one said, stand by the mailbox. Contract's on the way. Second one said, keep up the freelance work. Third one said, we'll hire you about the time ESPN5 hits the air. And they had just added ESPN2, right? So they checked the middle box, mailed it back. And literally like 60 days later or whatever, I got a call that I'm hired. My last interview, Vince Doria, legendary guy, Boston Globe, great
boss. I have rejection letters from Vince Doria that were encouraging.
You told me. Vince is the sweetest guy. He would have liked you. Vince is in there in my final, this is it. I've been back 3 times for interviews. I've sent him fucking 100 tapes. You know, are they ever going to hire me? And right, so ESPN2 had started. And remember, it was Keith Olbermann and Susie Colbert on the front. And then the backup people were Stuart Scott, Bill Pito, and Deb Kaufman. They did the little 2 minute updates and the feature stories, and they were the background guys. And Keith went back to Dan on Channel One. Stuart moved up. They needed one more guy, and that was me. And I remember telling Vince Doria, I said, look, I know what you guys have against me, why you haven't hired me. I get it, and it's true. I still don't know who the fifth pitcher on the Cubs is, and I really don't care. But if you tell me the story in the son of a bitch, it'll be the best story in your building. And I got hired. So that's
it. All these years later, Kenny Mayne is still here. He's doing podcasting. He's having fun. He's in a winning city right now where they're playing football and they're sitting around drinking coffee and probably eating pie down at Sirius Pie or eating salmon or something like that, waiting around. Your town, your hometown in Seattle, we talked Pilots last time and Mariners and the Ichiro and all this other stuff that's going on. But the Seahawks become so primary there after winning and Marshawn Lynch and what Pete Carroll, who just got fired again this week, did there. This second act that's coming in, well, third act if you count Jim Zorn and Steve Largent in the early days. But
well, wait a minute. You're leaving out Matt Hasselbeck years and Walter Jones where they made the Super Bowl and lost to Pittsburgh in that horrible
I was at that injury. Game. Yeah, yeah, I was so at was that I. game in 06. Yeah, that was, I'm sorry
Wonder,
about that.
Stevie Wonder sang at pregame, and the Rolling Stones, who he used to open for, played at halftime.
You know, the worst part about that is I missed the Stones at the Baltimore Civic Center. They played on Wednesday night of that week, ooh. And I was doing my show from the Pontiac, whatever, center, GM center, whatever. You and I have done all of these Super Bowls and all this stuff. The Seattle thing and the Seahawks coming back. McDonald's been obviously charged with that and was the guy here. That's sort of the story here as the Ravens have really kind of fallen apart this year.
It's really cool. His thing where he got the opportunity from Coach Harbaugh. And by the way, a tough beat for you guys. Like, nobody's cheering that. everybody thinks some things are so easy. Oh, 44 yards, that, because they're all hitting from 60 now. And it, relatively speaking, you know, it was easy, but you still got to make the play. You got to, it's just like Rory McIlroy missing a 2-foot putt. It's, you still got to make the play. And unfortunately for him, he handled it great. I was really impressed with his poise and how the teammate, like, hey, he made it. There's other plays in the game somebody screwed up, right? That one just has all the focus because there's 5 seconds.
Well, the other kicker missed the kick to open the door.
And, yeah, he missed the extra point. There you go. Back to back. But, yes, we love Coach Mike. He was going to get out of football and go into his chosen profession, which was in the accounting field. And he was ready to I'm done. It didn't work out in football to be a head coach or a big-time coach. And I think Coach Harbaugh, they had a relationship, and he brought him in. He quickly elevates. He's now the D coordinator. Their defense in the San Francisco game this last was just ridiculous. And our offense was way better than people criticized it after. We just blew a ton of opportunities down deep. You know, they could have easily been in the 30s with their score. But it doesn't matter. A win's a win's a win. Everybody who watches from their couches and thinks it's so easy and he's open and why didn't you do this? Well, because you're not on the field with a 312-pound guy about to kill you. You know, it's a hard, quarterback in particular is the hardest thing, hardest job in the world.
That's because you played it.
Well, I have that knowledge about how hard it is, but never at that. I mean, I can't even imagine. They have 2.5 seconds. They got to pre-read. They got to make all the check assignments before who's blocking what, what's going on. Play clock's clicking, crowd's loud. You
know, the Aaron Rodgers part of that, of going into Pittsburgh where it was silent in there and watching him operate at that level and also basically playing 7-on-7 because the Ravens had no pass rush.
Yeah, well, it's funny. The more time goes on, I think the quarterbacks have gotten progressively better at orchestrating in the old Peyton Manning way. You know, pointing, taking down the last, we're changing this, we're doing that. And I feel like way back when, it was almost like, don't say anything. We're trying to just concentrate on the thing we called. And I'm sure there were many, many options being taken, right? I mean, Joe Montana being taught by Bill Walsh. They were doing all sorts of things. But I feel like just recently, and maybe the microphones are just better. All I know is I'm hearing these quarterbacks basically just have a conversation. It's not just...
Well, Aaron Rodgers told a running back, go wide and run, yeah, right? Basically, and then throw him the ball. Because he saw that the safety was lined up wrong.
Yeah, and apparently on that winning, what would be the winning touchdown, that was like pretty free. What do you want to run on the backside? And he, all right, stop and go, you know. And the defensive
like drawing backs, it up in the dirt, right, yeah, with your finger, right?
That's the most famous photograph in football, in my opinion. The Joe Montana, Bill Walsh kneeling, drawing a play in the dirt. That's what it reminded me of, but... Your corner fell too, right? He fell, he bit, and he slipped, and that was it. But back to Seattle, we're thrilled. I think Sam Darnold gets way too much hate. The guy's been really good. Quarterbacking's really hard. Even the four pick game against the Rams, and we still almost won because we got the ball and he hit click click click, and we had a 60 to try to win, didn't make it, but could have, and then we would have forgotten about the four picks. But I think he's doing enough. I think he's using JSN the right way. I want to use 22, man. The guy we got from Shahid from New Orleans, he's special. He needs to get involved even more. I'm excited. We get a week off. See who has to come to us. All the games are in Seattle. It's a tough place to play. I hope it rains. We're excited. We like our shot at getting to Santa Clara.
My favorite Kenny Mayne is the one wearing a Pearl Jam hat referring to the Seahawks and their bye week in the Wii. We vernacular.
Of course
we.
You do that. Don't we all do that as
we
fans who are in a city or belong to a city? It's a we thing. I mean, they thank the fans whenever things go well, the support the fans give them, the energy they give them. So it really is a collective effort.
I use we when I'm in Quebec and I want to thank someone for bringing me croissant or poutine. Kenny Mayne. So Pearl Jam, I mean, last time you saw them, have you? I saw them in Atlanta. And I sent you a picture that night because your boy Ament, who it's a bucket list thing. I have now asked Eddie Vedder a question. So, like, I'm sort of there. I chased McCready through the press box. He was the 12th man when the Ravens played in Seattle. I didn't see him. I've never met him. He shopped at Soundgarden when they played here a couple of years ago. But I've asked Eddie Vedder a question. And Ament is totally on my bucket list of, like, a dude I need to, like, have on the show and talk. But he wore a Mookie Blaylock.
Of course.
Atlanta throwback in Atlanta. And I'm like, That's cool. And my friend that I took to the show lives in Atlanta. I said to her, I'm like, you do know they were called Mookie Blaylock back in the day. She's a sports fan too. She's like, oh, really? I didn't know that. I'm like, that's the gig with the jersey.
Yeah.
I wonder what percentage of people knew that, but I'm figuring probably everybody at a Pearl Jam show, right?
I think a lot of people do. And then also he doesn't care if they don't because he's just doing it because it's the right thing to do. Great guy. Huge basketball guy, by the way. He was on University of Montana his first year there. Didn't stay. Saw that he wasn't going to play enough and all the effort. But he played basketball all his life. Bryce still goes out and shoots jumpers. And I sent you a note a couple weeks ago. I don't know if you saw this. I hosted Pearl Jam Radio. And I
saw it right before Christmas. You sent me the dates and the times. So
I did
like
a five-day run, a residency, I call it. It was fun. And I interviewed Jeff Ament. And then we both tributed. This is a crazy story. I lost my best friend, Mark Sansevier, in Montana. I was in New York promoting our show, the We Need a Fourth, and I get a call from his sister, you need to get out to Montana because things don't look great. He had muscular dystrophy. It's a long story, but jumped on a plane. I'm in Billings, and I sent Jeff and Tim Bierman, who's the head of their 10 Club, friends with Jeff, and he came into the band. And I just was thinking of Montana, period. Like, hey, send some more love to Eastern Montana because I know they're so proud of their state, right, their home state. And Jeff was going through the exact same thing. He was losing a childhood friend who used to grow up with, he said, like doing rock and roll quizzes, reading Cream magazine, you know. And we both were living that at the same time. And sadly enough, we both lost our friends. But we got to tribute them. And we got to tribute Lenny Wilkins. We talked about the future of the band. Breaking news. I'm like Rolling Stone reporter here. We don't know what the future is. Jeff, he answered it. Honestly, but I said, I can't not ask. How do you not ask what's going on with the band with your drummer, you know, who just left, right? Matt. And he said, we don't know. Right now we're just enjoying the holidays and relaxing and working on our own music and doing this. And he said, but who knows? Maybe somebody goes, hey, let's do another tour in the spring or what? Anything.
Well, they're going to need a drummer if they're going to tour, right? And like Rush.
Of course, being the idiot I am, I sent him a drummer rec. He's like, yeah, did I even answer that text? No, he's like, everybody's telling him, why don't you get Stevie Wonder, like a collaborative, a fusion band. He can play drums.
I saw Pearl Jam play on a night in Oakland in the middle of COVID where I believe Matt Cameron had COVID that night, and they recruited a kid to play.
Yeah. I read about
who
that.
Who was Vedder's daughter's favorite band, and they were from like, somewhere in Menlo Park or something like that.
And he did great.
I was there. I mean, they only played hits, but they played them really well. And then the next night, they recruited a musician buddy who owned a music store. That's because awesome. They didn't have – and he came, and they, you know, they just did a live, and they did, the hits. But
well, what's funny, me and Gretchen were going to go to the Vegas show that got canceled because of COVID. I don't know who everybody had it by that point. And we already knew it was canceled, but we already had the hotel booked and the flight. It's like, let's just go and have fun for a couple of days, see what happens. And we went and saw Silk Sonic, right? Bruno Mars and Nanny Sapak.
Okay.
And one of, I'd say, top five concerts I've ever been to.
My wife and I love Bruno Mars, but yeah.
It was so fun. They were funny. They're super talented. They played everything. And Gretchen's dancing for 2 hours straight. Like, It was a fun show. So
happy wife, happy life. That's all I can say. Oh, but I knew you were a BFD on your birthday in Quebec when Amen and Eddie played your favorite song for you and your wife in Quebec.
It sounds like I'm bragging, which I guess I am, but I had no idea that Jeff knew I was coming, but because of COVID, you know, people weren't meeting after, you know, it was just like, hey, we're coming to your show, right? Remember, everybody was.
You drove me home on the way home. I got in your car. You gave me a ride back, and I'm like. Nice, dude. They played a song for you. You're a BFD, dude.
It was present tense. So it was my birthday, and he didn't do it as a happy birthday. He just said, hey, I know one of our friends is up in the audience tonight. We're playing this one for you. And as he's like, did he just say my name? Like, it was really bizarre. It was surreal. And then they played present tense. I love present tense. I love a song called Untitled. And that was when Gretchen and I got married. We had that song be our first dance song. It's a shorty. It's like 90 seconds long, and it's about missing someone and wanting to be with someone. And I think he makes up new words half the time, but it's the same.
Like Yellow Ledbetter a little bit, probably.
I
right?
heard him explain Yellow Ledbetter. It was Eddie Vedder's solo, which is also a great show. And it was in Newark at the, I think it was the Newark Performing Arts Center, I think it's called, a beautiful place. And he just started talking about it. His explanation, and some of the words match this explanation, some of the words are indecipherable, and sometimes they change. But he waves and they don't wave back, right? He's acknowledging these people on their porch and they don't wave back. And the story he told was, it was a guy who lost his brother at war, probably Iraq. And this guy's, you know, a little hippie-ish, he's got long hair, whatever. And he's walking down the street and he sees this place and they got an American flag and he waves to them and they don't wave back. That's the story.
That's the whole story. When are you getting another gig at Pearl Jam Radio? Anytime soon? Did you do a good enough job they're going to have you back?
I totally enjoyed it. Now, partly it was, I didn't mention it very much on the show, but you know, that's, they're on Sirius Channel 22, and we have a relationship with Sirius, our new little show, you know, underneath the Smartless guys. So
We Need a Fourth is the show for Kenny May.
That's right. That's not why I was telling you why it is. I've done it now, I think 4 times.
And you get to play the music you want. You pick the songs.
Yeah. But you know what I did this time? And I should have written to you. I'm sorry I left you out. But I thought of all my friends who love Pearl Jam. And I sent this mass text chain. I said, I'm going to share this with my friends. You guys, give me your favorite Pearl Jam song you want played. I'm hosting next week. And the only ones I played, two non-Pearl Jam songs, I played off the very top, Taj Mahal. Are you familiar with Taj Mahal?
I am not, but go ahead.
Look it up right now. I can text you this as well. Taj Mahal, and I think the song is Ain't Gonna Whistle No More. No, Ain't Gonna Whistle Dixie No More. I think that's the title. And so when I was a little kid, the Sonic broadcast, Seattle Sonics broadcast, would open with that song. So I've known about Taj Mahal since I was 7 or 8 years old. They play that as their intro and their extra, right? So I open the show. Why are we playing Taj Mahal? And I tell the story about the Sonics, and I tell the story that we just lost Lenny Wilkins. And the whole thing was meant to congeal all that and then bring in Jeff and talk about Lenny. The other one I played, Stevie Wonder, for my friend Mark who passed, and it's was written for Richard Nixon but has great application today. Look it up. It's called You Haven't Done Nothing. Then my friends selected the other song. It was fun. It was a good show.
Well, I hope to attend another Pearl Jam show with you. It is always a pleasure to catch up with you. You always make me laugh, make me smile, make me feel at home.
Wait,
and I appreciate
it. I have one more story, unless you got some commercial break.
No, why would I do that?
I don't know. Why are we stopping? I you mentioned doing the comedy and mixing that with sports. I told last time, or one of the last times, we talked about the movie I had made called Wiffle Ball. And it's about a day in 1989. Ken Griffey is a rookie. I'm in maybe my second year of local TV reporting, right? Doing sports. And I get Ken Griffey and Harold Reynolds to go to the Seattle Science Center right by the Space Needle. And we end up throwing wiffle balls on a speed pitch. And I've had this tape, the raw tape of this thing that happened. You know, we showed our dumb little story that week. And I've held onto the raw tape for, what's it now, 35 years, 36 years. And I ran into Griffey, and he brought it up. He brought up the time we threw wiffle balls. And I was like, wait a minute. He's like Willie Mays. He's like the greatest player of our generation, right? And, or one of, for sure. And if he's still thinking about it, there's got to be something there. So I went and found the tape and made like a half-hour documentary about what happened, like a day in the life. What happened that day? What's the truth?
Behind the scenes playing wiffle ball with Ken Griffey, basically.
And we got Ken Burns. I titled him a fellow documentarian, Ken Burns. By the way, his new one on Revolution, I watched all 6. Amazing.
Everybody loves that.
Yeah. And so I made this movie. It was out a bit. It got on Fubo. It didn't get a lot of attention. Like, you know, I still believe in the movie, right? And I was trying to do something bigger with it. So about a year ago, I made up a stand-up, 30-minute stand-up telling childhood stories that marry to the showing of the movie. The whole thing I consider a show, right? Here's my dumb childhood stories that set the table to watch this movie that emanates from my childhood, right? Growing up playing wiffle ball. And so that's another project I'm working on.
That was everybody's first love, wiffle ball, right?
Oh, for sure. Unless you were East Coast, you're maybe playing stickball. Lenny Wilkins famously played stickball with Willie Mays in the streets of New York.
I can't. My earliest memories of doing anything athletic was playing wiffle ball with my dad in the backyard.
Dude, we used to keep stats. In fact, I've Mark Sansevier again, like fourth reference, but it's relevant. He broke Babe Ruth's home run record
one summer.
In one summer,
yeah, of course.
1972. He hit something like 840, or we discounted about 50 of them because sometimes, you know, when the yellow bats would break and your sister's not home to take you to Value Mart, you have to use something. So, you know,
we went to Wooden Bats and Pinkies and moved down to the church lot. We did. We just, it was too much muscle in the backyard for wiffle ball once we got to be about 10.
We had a real field, and my sister would sing the anthem. We would light up fireworks. We'd chalk it with either sugar or flour, and we would just play all day. We would just play all day and keep stats, counting home runs.
You didn't even have a baseball team. You had the Pilots, for crying out loud. I admire you, Kenny. You know,
Seattle Pilots. Thanks for the reference. Tommy Harper led the American League in stolen bases with 73.
Every time I see the logo or think of Six Stadium, I think of you. Yes.
And now it's a Lowe's Home Improvement. They've wiped out the stadium. And then, you know, they went to Milwaukee. A lot of people don't know that. The Brewers were the Pilots. And then about 7 years later, I think Slade Gordon was our attorney general. He sued Major League Baseball. They gave us a franchise, and they became
Mariners. That the Mariners were birthed out of the piss-offery of the 1 year of the Pilots. I didn't
Precisely.
Know that.
Precisely. Our allegation was that you didn't give Seattle a chance to build the right kind of stadium. And that became the Kingdom, right? The Kingdom was built later. But yeah, that's how we got the Seattle Mariners. And we lost by one pitch. That was such a fun postseason, even in not making it all the way. Totally thrilled with how much fun that was. Cal Raleigh's amazing season. You know, so many good moments. And we just threw one pitch. But you know what's funny about that to me? We lose on that one pitch. Had he looked at it and it was a strike, they go, blew a fastball by him. Great pitch. People throw the exact same ball. And if it's successful, great job. If the guy hits it, he made a mistake. I think some of the analysis is kind of silly, is kind of what I was getting at.
Well, the Seattle people have been suffering here for a while. So you got a week off football, the guy who probably should have been our coach coaching your team. And at some point, you got the inside track that if Pearl Jam tours again, not if, when, you'll know who the drummer is. It won't be you or anybody you recommend, but we're going to have a good time with Pearl Jam sometime in the near future.
I played drums. My parents got me a drum set when I was like first grade. Broke it in 2 days. You know, it was paper or something. And then they got me a snare drum, which was pretty good. They made me play it outside. They told me it was to share it with the neighborhood. And so I bought that. I'm out there banging on. And I took it to school for show and tell. And the teacher said, that was great. Bring it back next week. You're going to go tour the other classes. And so I thought I was, you know, one of the great drummers out there. My wife, who was a teacher, said, you probably weren't very good. It's a teacher prank where they send a kid who's terrible at something to other classes so they can all laugh at you later in the conference room.
Well, no wonder. It sounds like that shaped you. You know, we'll get you some therapy for that. Kenny Mayne is here. He is always the main event. His podcast is We Need a Fourth with Smart Listen. You can find him out on Pearl Jam Radio sometimes. Courtside for Pearl Jam.
I won't leave because we didn't mention Run Freely. I have to do this.
Run Freely. Go ahead.
Runfreely.org. Tell your rich friends. Runfreely.org. We had such great support at the end of the year. We raised enough money to get 3 new veterans. Learned around Thanksgiving or Christmas that they're next in line. They get to go get this device up near Seattle, and they'll be walking or running pain-free. The device is amazing. If you just look up runfreely.org, tells the whole story, tells how we're trying to get people out of pain, and it was a pretty good end of the year. So hopefully that's momentum into 26.
Every day, veterans return home from serving our country. Many suffer from catastrophic injuries that severely impact their ability to do simple activities like running and walking. Run Freely. You can find that out. There's a little Joe Montana experience up here, a lot of different things. Kenny, you're always doing good stuff, and I appreciate the heck out of you. And I know we visit once a year. Pearl Jam soon, or maybe we'll go see Tesla at the casino up in Connecticut in a couple weeks. All right,
Let's rock and roll.
Kenny Mayne joining us here. He is the main event. We're doing all sorts of things, including the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It's baseball season here, as well as the time when we watch the other teams play in the playoffs. We are hoping to hear from the Ravens brass as well. Any breaking news will happen first on the WNST Tech Service, brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore positive 27 years later.